Chapter 22. Elith collapsed to her knees, trembling, voiceless, her mind blank and numb, uncomprehending. Surely it was a hallucination or a vision. The ancient woman was mostly laying on her side, though she'd pushed herself up with her arms, looking as though she were trying to recover from a fall. Her thin gray hair was stringy, tangled and matted, and she seemed much smaller than Elith remembered her. "Brightest of daughters," the paragon said, and then she lowered herself back to the floor of the cavern again. "Deepest of regrets." Elith opened her mouth, but no words would come forth, and she just shook her head uselessly. "I'm sorry for the shock," the ancient woman said. "I could think of no way to announce myself that wouldn't have had the same effect." "Illumined Mother," Elith heard herself say. She'd not uttered those words since some time before her exile, but they tumbled out almost of their own volition. "I know you never expected to see me again, child. Though when last we saw each other, if you had known this was the condition in which you would find me, I suspect it might have brought you some measure of joy." Elith shook her head again, but this time in actual response. "No, Paragon," she said, finally in command of her voice again. "No, I never would have wished for this." She pushed herself up to her feet, still shaken by the encounter, but strong enough to cross over and kneel next to the matriarch of the first house. "Are you injured?" The paragon let out a brittle chuckle. "Not physically. The rest of me is another matter." Elith stared at her, at a complete loss of what to do or say. So many questions cascaded through her mind that she couldn't grab hold of even one. "You made it just in time," she said. "But only just, I fear." How long the woman had been down here, Elith had no idea. She had no equipment, no supplies, nothing on her other than her blue-gray operations suit, and that was filthy and torn. Elith unslung her pack, pulled out a canister of water, and bent to help the paragon drink, but the woman lifted her hand to refuse the aid. There wasn't really anything the ancient woman could do to prevent Elith from helping her. Elith slid her arm under the paragon's shoulders and gently raised her up, cradling her head against her shoulder. Elith was shocked at how light she was and how frail. "Drink something," she said. The paragon lay against her, unmoving. "Paragon, you must drink," Elith said, "at the very least, so that I may say I did everything I could to save you." The woman chuckled again. "Very well," she said, "but you mustn't reveal to any of them that I willingly accepted aid from an exile." "As an exile, I'm under no obligation to acquiesce to your wishes, Paragon," Elith said, and she raised the water to the Paragon's lips, holding both the canister and the woman steady while she took two feeble sips. "No," the paragon said when Elith lowered the water, "but you could at least humor an old woman's last wishes." "What are you doing down here?" Elith asked. "The same thing you are, I suspect. My best."
"And the team you brought with you?"
The paragon shook her head weakly.
"I lost them," she said. "All of them.
I lost my daughters." Elith had known that would be her answer, had thought she'd prepared herself to hear it. Yet once the words were spoken, she felt them as a more substantial reality, as though they alone had transformed the possibility into actuality, and only now had forever closed the door on any other outcome. The loss cut her deeply, despite her expectation, and though she and the paragon had parted as enemies, in that moment they were united in sorrow, each the only one who could comprehend the depth of the other's pain. Elith knew nothing else to do, other than to hug the paragon closer, to draw comfort from and offer it to the matriarch.
Come now, the paragon eventually said. All this will be in vain if we sit here in our grief for much longer. I have discovered many things about this place, information you will need to carry back with you.
Holding that white of a woman in her arms and hearing the frailty of her voice rent Elith's spirit with savage despair, even at her lowest points, when she'd tried to command herself to accept that the paragon was gone, she'd pictured the ancient matriarch standing in all her glorious, terrible power and falling in one broken instant before some incomprehensible force. To find her here, withered, the spirit that once seemed vast and unbreakable, reduced to little more than shadow and mist, struck Elith as a final, intolerable cruelty. The paragon had stood as the truest example of Sarath Hanan, the highest ideal of First House doctrine, the living embodiment of wise, quiet action and unyielding endurance. Though Elith had left that house behind, she realized that she'd never truly left its path. Even now she found herself still in pursuit of Sarath Hanan, and the fading of the paragon seemed to her to be the dissolution of the First House, and all that it exalted, and all that it upheld. The collapse of the First House would be the collapse of the Ascendance itself. To come so far, to withstand all that Quell's shadow had thrown at them, only to witness the death of that ancient house was more than Elith could bear. No, more than she would allow.
Listen now, the paragon said.
No, Elith said.
Elith, you must hear me.
No, Elith repeated. I didn't allow the Hezra to drag me all this way just to be your messenger girl. She gently laid the woman down again, and then stood and donned her pack, cinching it up tight. She gestured to the dragonflies, and they resumed their previous formation around her. The paragon looked up at her, bewildered.
Elith, please.
I'm not abandoning you, paragon, she said, and then she knelt, cradled the woman like a child, and lifted her up off the ground. The paragon was alarmingly light. In other circumstances, she would have been easy to carry. Getting her back through the tunnels, though, after all Elith had already suffered, was going to be a test of Elith's true limits.
Elith, don't be foolish. My time is done.
Well, mine is precious, so you'll have to talk on the way. Elith carried the paragon back to the opening where she'd entered and paused there. She'd barely managed to pass through whatever force had bent itself against her the first time. The memory of it, inexplicable as it was, made her reluctant to go back in. And beyond that, what further horrors would she be forced to confront? Even if she managed to make it all the way out of the network of tunnels, all she was likely to find was the ruined bodies of her companions and an insurmountable number of monstrous abominations arrayed against her. But it was her nature to take the next step, even knowing the one after that might prove impossible. And so she stepped once more into that awful tunnel, embracing the psychic pain she knew would at once envelop her in its oppressive cloud. Only it didn't. Whatever threshold she'd crossed over before must have been farther from the chamber entrance than she'd realized. She steeled herself once more and took another step, and once more felt no resistance. For each foot of distance she gained back up the tunnel, Elith gained a degree of confidence, until eventually she was able to convince herself that whatever presence had attempted to dominate her before had fled once she reached the chamber. And though part of her mind carried the idea that it might return at any moment, she kept it at bay by focusing herself on navigating the difficult tunnels with the fragile paragon in her arms. Despite the matriarch's insistence that she was moments from death and had critical information to reveal before she went, she remained silent through the difficult journey. It turned out to be a good thing. Elith wouldn't have been able to understand or remember anything she said anyway. Light as she wasn't weightless, and carrying her through the tunnel system took its toll on Elith's body. Combined with the effects she'd suffered from her encounter with the force beneath the mountain, Elith started losing faith that she was going to be able to make it. By the time they reached the point of transition from the compressed tunnels into the rounded, easier system, Elith's legs and back burned white-hot with fatigue. She considered dumping her pack, knowing any weight she could shed would help, but to do so, she'd have to set the Paragon down, and if she did that, she knew she'd never be able to pick the woman up again. So Elith pushed on, refusing to look at the nav unit clipped to her pack, for fear that seeing how much farther it was to the surface would steal her resolve. She thought of nothing more than just following the dragonflies as they led her onward and upward, step after step. When she first saw the light growing ahead of her, hope sprung in her heart. Her first thought was that she must have lost all sense of time and distance. The trip back seemed much shorter than the journey in had been. But when she glanced at the nav unit, her heart fell. She hadn't even made it halfway. Involuntarily, she stopped. The soft glow ahead was fuzzy, shifting, and Elith realized she was losing consciousness. As she stood there swaying but refusing to fall, the strength of the light grew and grew, until finally it became dazzling. And then a voice called from within it. "Elith!" A man's voice. The Arbiter. Arbiter Oyun. He was still alive, and he'd come looking for her. He ran to her and without question or statement slung his rifle and took the Paragon in his arms. He stood looking at Elith for a moment, concern obvious on his face. "I'll come back for you," he said. She was too spent to speak, her mind too numbed to find words, but she shook her head and commanded her body to move. At her first step, Oyun turned and headed back up the tunnel, and though he got ahead of her, he glanced back every few seconds to make sure he hadn't lost her. After what seemed like a full hour of trudging along an unchanging corridor in an ethereal fog, Elith became aware of a change in temperature. A few minutes later, they were coming out of the mouth of the tunnel onto the small ledge overlooking the shelf. Down below, the rocky shelf was strewn with shattered stone mixed with earth and vine, the broken remnants of some unknown number of the constructs. There were too many pieces covering too much ground for Elith to tell for certain how many of the creatures Kurush had managed to cut down. He was nowhere to be seen. She wondered how he had finally died. If the creatures had caught him and crushed him into oblivion, or torn him to pieces, or thrown him from the mountain entirely. Before she could ask the Arbiter, though, a rumble of thunder rolled across the mountain. Another storm coming, she thought, to smash down upon them. At least they could seek shelter in the tunnel this time. The thunder continued on for too long, though, far too long for a single peal, no matter how severe the storm. And then the sound broke open in the sky just beyond the mountain, and at last Elith realized it was the sound of a ship's engines, the shuttle. Somehow, the shuttle was slowing to a hover and extending its boarding ramp to the ledge at the tunnel entrance. The hatch opened, and Kurush was there, bloodied, bruised, left arm wrapped and in a sling, but alive. Oyun turned and nodded for Elith to board first, and she staggered up the ramp, scarcely able to grasp all that was happening. Kurush caught hold of her upper arm as soon as she was close enough and guided her to a seat in the middle of the shuttle, and then left her to help the Arbiter get the Paragon aboard. Nieta appeared from the front, a kind smile on her face, tears in her eyes as she looked on Elith. But when Oyun came through the hatch and she saw the Paragon in his arms, she let out a cry of indeterminate emotion. "She's still hanging on," the Arbiter said. "Help me get her to the med bay." Nieta didn't react, just stood there, staring at the frail woman in his arms. "Nieta!" he barked. "Med bay!" The sharpness of his voice broke through and stirred her to action. She nearly leaped into the medical bay. Oyun followed close behind her. From her seat, Elith caught sight of the single medbay bed and saw it empty. Her heart dropped at that, realizing that Captain Ames must not have made it. She heard the hatch closing behind her. Carouche stepped up next to her and touched her shoulder with light fingertips. Elith looked up at him, saw how drained of color his face was, how flecked it was with small but deep gashes sealed over with medical gel. "Carouche," she said, "after all I did to fix you up, and now look at you."
"Did you find what you were looking for?" he asked.
She shook her head.
"No," she said, "but we might have found what we needed."
His brow furrowed slightly, but he nodded, and then Elith realized that he was standing in front of her, and Nieda and Oyun were in the medbay.
"Carouche," she said, "who's flying the ship?"
"I am," Ames said from the front, his words partially slurred.
He leaned around his seat just enough to look back at her with one eye. She could tell from his profile that his face was swollen, and there were bandages running both up under his jaw and over the top of his head. But he did his best to give her a little smile before he winced in pain.
"Gah, it still kills to turn around," he said, slowly rotating himself back to face forward.
"And if you keep doing it, you'll tear the grafts," Carouche admonished,
his tone suggesting it wasn't the first time he'd said it.
"What are you doing up there?" Elith asked.
"Piloting," he said.
"Don't worry," Carouche
said in a mock lowered voice, still projected for the captain to hear.
"Nieta's been doing the actual flying. We just let him sit there when it's on auto."
"Keeps me from feeling useless," Ames called back.
Despite the difficulty he was having speaking clearly, it was obvious he wasn't letting his injuries dampen his spirits.
"And I do hate to feel useless. But hey, at least my trigger finger still works."
Carouche chuckled at that.
"I thought I had already adequately expressed my gratitude, Captain Ames," he said. "But if not, I remain in your debt."
Ames gave Carouche a thumbs up.
"Truth be told, I was looking for Varen," he said. "Lucky for you, you were wearing his gear."
The shuttle shifted a moment later, accelerated gently, and pulled away from the mountain.
"Don't tell Nieda," the captain said. "I just want to see if I can keep from crashing this time."
"Where are we going?" Elith asked.
"Base camp," Carouche told her, "assuming it's still there."
Elith nodded, and the movement made her head swim.
"Rest," Carouche said. "You've done enough today."
She was too exhausted to argue. Their base camp was still intact and appeared completely untouched since they'd left it. The medical facility there was little more than a field hospital, but seemed state-of-the-art compared to the shuttle's tiny medbay. As soon as they touched down, they moved the Paragon into an isolation room in the facility and got her hooked up to what seemed to Elith like one of everything. Oyun took charge of Elith next, and despite her insistence that she was fine, put her through a battery of diagnostics to ensure her vitals were stable and not at risk of sudden collapse. In fact, everyone got some sort of treatment. Ames, the second most with Carouche close behind. Nieda was the only exception, who refused to do anything other than attend the Paragon to keep constant watch over her. Once she'd passed her diagnostics, Elith, too, tried to stay with Nieda and the Paragon. But when Arbiter Oyun discovered her there, he did everything he could to force her out of the facility. Elith eventually relented and allowed him to order her to sleep and recover from her ordeal, right after she made him promise to come get her the moment the Paragon was stable enough to talk to. It was 10 hours later that Nieda woke her. The two women walked together to the medical facility, and Elith was surprised to find Oyun already in the isolation room. When she and Nieda entered, it was obvious that he'd been there for a while, and that the Paragon had been talking with him for quite some time. He had a workstation set up with a number of displays in orbit around it and was sitting with his face only a few inches from one, engrossed in his work. Karush stood quietly in one corner. He glanced at the women when they came in, but said nothing.
"Arbiter," Elith said, "you promised the moment she was stable."
At her words, Oyun turned his head toward her in what seemed like slow motion, his eyes lingering on the display until the last possible moment, as though bonded to the figures projected there. When his gaze finally fell on her, it was like he'd never seen her before. It took several seconds for him to make the journey from his distant land of pure abstraction back to the physical world. Elith was sure he hadn't heard anything she'd said. But when his mind at last returned, he smiled and answered her.
"Indeed I did, dear. I am sorry," he said, though he clearly wasn't. "Just got wrapped up in my work here. Fortunately, I imagine there was no harm in you getting the extra rest, and you haven't missed anything. The great paragon of the first house has merely been educating this poor man on the most basic of fundamentals."
The paragon was propped up in a semi-reclined position, and though she looked better than she had when Elith had found her, she still seemed like she could slip away within the hour. Her hands were clasped in front of her, almost skeletal. Her skin was sunken and gray-tinted, but when Elith locked eyes with the woman, she saw the ancient fire burning there once more, and her initial opinion changed. If death were planning to take the paragon any time soon, it would likely need to bring friends. Even so, that deep well of strength and wisdom was tinged with a foreign quality. Gone was her inscrutable certainty, and the sense that she knew far more than she'd revealed. Instead, her inner being seemed saturated with sorrow, a hopelessness not for herself, but rather for the future.
"Nieda," the paragon said, her voice stronger than seemed possible for that frame.
She held Elith's gaze for a moment longer, before turning her attention to Nieda.
"Mighty and faithful Nieda. I know it hurt you to be denied a place in the first part of our mission, but do you see now the wisdom in it?"
Nieda bowed her head.
"Yes, Paragon. Do not be troubled. Had you been here with me, the outcome would have been the same. Only it would have been you that I lost instead of Umari. And only you could have done what you've done."
"Thank you, Illumined Mother. Your kindness is limitless."
"No one other than you," the paragon continued, her gaze piercing deeply into Nieda's. "You have been precisely where you needed to be, doing what you and you alone could do."
Nieda held the woman's look for as long as she could, but when the tears arose, she closed her eyes and bowed her head. And in that moment, Elith saw at last the guilt Nieda had been carrying break off her, and the quiet tears she wept were of relief and a much-needed release of pain. Elith turned toward her, laid her hand on her sister's back. Nieda reached out and took her other hand in her own, held it for a span.
"And you," the paragon said, returning to Elith, "the arbiter here has been speaking quite thoroughly about your actions in support of the mission."
Nieda squeezed Elith's hand, released it, and gave her a little nod. Elith turned and met the paragon's sharp, unblinking stare.
"Clearly, I am fortunate that you chose to accept this operation," the woman added.
"As though you had nothing to do with it," Elith answered.
"How could I have? I was already here."
She smiled thinly. "In our last meeting, Paragon," Elith said, "did I perhaps fail to articulate my feelings about your intrigues? If so, I'd be happy to recount them for you."
"No, no. You made your thoughts on such matters quite plain to me.
But mine is a higher duty, and at times the plans of the house must reach out to make use of even the most unwilling of instruments." I may have been willing, had I been approached in a more forthright manner.
May have been.
But it appears you have nevertheless been useful, and therefore the method by which you were employed is now irrelevant. Arbiter Oyun tells me you were the one to discern the technological nature of this place.
I guessed it was a ship, yes.
Not a ship, the Paragon corrected.
A weapon.
Elith reacted to the shift in terminology. Ship could have meant many uses. Weapon implied Quell's shadow had been formed with single intent. Despite her insistence that it needed to be destroyed, the reflexive response revealed how she had yet been clinging to subconscious hope that some other purpose for it might still be discovered. Varen's lingering influence, perhaps, though she'd not noticed it before.
I know you may find this difficult to believe, the Paragon continued, but there are some things in this universe I take even more seriously than the dance of the Ascendants. Seriously enough, in fact, to set aside past differences, no matter how great.
And to form alliances, she said, eyes flicking momentarily to the Arbiter,
no matter how tenuous.
After all, there can be no dance if there is no ascendance. At the Paragon's last statement, Nieta looked up.
Is that truly what we're facing, Illumined Mother?
It is the role of the First House to consider all possibilities, child. It is what brought me here, to study this place for myself.
And having studied it, Elith said, you believe it remains a possibility? The Paragon shook her head.
A certainty. Then we've been right all along.
We have no choice but to destroy it.
We have no choice at all, the Paragon said.
And then she added a statement that Elith never imagined she would hear uttered by that great woman.
It is beyond us.
The Paragon's quiet declaration thundered as a sentence of death, issued by the last and greatest judge. There was no sorrow in her voice, no sense of despair. She was merely stating a fact, confirming a truth none of them wanted to accept. And with her words, a heaviness settled in the room, a finality that robbed all hope of victory over Quell's shadow. The ancient matriarch of the First House was not one to readily allow defeat, nor to relent. No matter how long or how much she needed to endure in order to prevail in the end. To hear her speak with such finality, such grave resignation, filled Elith with cold dread. This, then, was the source of the Paragon's great sorrow. Perhaps the First House had indeed died down in that cave, and with it, the Ascendants. Karush glanced toward the door as though he'd heard something outside, looked back to Elith for a moment, and then, wordlessly, left the room. Overcome by the heavy proclamation, maybe, and unwilling to allow the others to see his genuine reaction. It wasn't until after the door had closed behind him that anyone else responded.
So then, what?
Nieta asked.
What do we do?
Endure. The Paragon said, endure until the very end.
She paused and looked around at each of them gathered there. Whatever its origin or its nature, unless this adversary turns aside of its own volition, then it is likely the end of our race. But it is our nature to endure much, even in the face of final defeat. We will not allow it to rob us of that as well. The matriarch spoke with stern assurance, as though exhorting a unit of troopers before they made their last stand, commanding them all, hers the final word. For a time it seemed to be the end of all discussion, until the Arbiter spoke up.
Forgive me, Paragon, he said.
I know it is the ultimate foolishness to contradict the seat of wisdom, but I am nothing if not the greatest of fools in the history of our people. There may yet be a way.
You found something? Eleth asked.
No, Oyun admitted, turning back to his displays. But there is structure in it. I can sense it there somewhere. And so I feel that I should find something, given enough time.
The Paragon lowered her eyes to her clasped hands in front of her. Whatever she had revealed to the Arbiter, she'd done in an attempt to convince him of the futility of their efforts. And Eleth realized that for all the physical deterioration the Paragon had suffered under the mountain, it was her loss of hope that most made her body seem so small and fragile.
Whatever solution you believe you might find, Arbiter, you must be certain of its success before you attempt it, the Paragon said. There is no room for error against this foe.
He glanced back over to her.
I'm afraid I'm not wired for certainty, Paragon, but I take it your caution has something to do with the Shadow's inner workings?
She nodded.
It is a mimic, she said. How it learns, I could not discern. But the longer I engaged with it, the more apparent it became. There are elements of Quell within it, yes, drawn from its long study of that world, and elements of each of us who have interacted with it deeply, I fear. I did what I could to restrain it. Each touch only expanded its capabilities.
Varen must have sensed your influence, Eleth said. He told me more than once that the planet was at war with itself.
The Arbiter winced at her words. Varen is alive? The Paragon asked, her voice even, despite her obvious displeasure.
Oyun held Eleth's gaze for a moment before answering, like one sibling caught in a lie because of the other.
He was, he said, the last time we saw him.
I see, said the Paragon. Of all those lost, I suppose I should not be surprised that he alone would find a way to survive. But if he is loose on this planet, then our danger is even greater than I feared.
She lifted a hand and with one finger traced a line across her forehead.
I strove with this world, searched for a weakness or way to turn its power against itself, she said. Some of its capabilities can be temporarily overridden or diverted, but neither for long nor with great control, and every attempt to disrupt it only seems to make it stronger.
Diverted in what way? Eleth asked. You found our ship, I presume.
Parts of it, yes, but not when we landed. It had been buried and only uncovered when the surface shifted. A moment later, Eleth made the connection.
You formed the cliff.
The Paragon nodded.
My intent was to reveal the vessel to you. The method was imprecise.
She reached over to take a canister of water from her bedside table, sipped from it, cleared her throat, and continued.
I sensed your arrival through the planet, and with what little energy I could spare, I did what I could to assist you, to lead you to me.
With that revelation, Eleth's mind sorted through the anomalies they'd encountered, extracted the few that had been useful, or at least had caused no harm. The bird singing Umurai's song, the elk from Quell leading them toward the mountain, Dmini's monument in the cliff face, and another.
It was your voice, Eleth said. Your voice I heard in the storm.
I followed what I heard, the Paragon said with a careful nod, though I did not understand. I am not convinced it was of any use.
Kurush returned, slipping quietly once more into the room and remaining by the door, present but removed from the conversation. He caught Eleth's eye and tipped his head back in a subtle signal. He had something to tell her when the time was right.
As I believe you have experienced for yourselves, the Paragon added, the mechanisms of this place,
this device, can be resisted for a time, but not finally overcome.
What if we brought more? Nieta started.
Not if all the skill and craft of the house were to combine with all the might of the Hezra, the Paragon answered before she could finish. I thought perhaps with her, she said, dipping her head toward Elith, we might find a way. But in the time since, I have learned that if there is a vulnerability, the means to exploit it remains well beyond our grasp. She returned her full attention to Elith. It seems that our understanding is not as complete as we once thought.
Paragon, Elith said, I find it difficult to believe you brought us here, through all of this, merely to tell us our race is doomed.
I don't need you to believe it for it to be true. Elith looked around at the others in the room. Nieta was withdrawn, her gaze cast down to the floor in front of her, having heard, and it seemed, accepted the final word of her sovereign. Arbiter Oyun sat with his head turned halfway between the Paragon and his workstation, staring at nothing in particular, his brow furrowed as his expansive mind searched for some solution out there in his most abstract of realms. To no avail, and Karush stood at silent attention, stoic in service as guardian. Seeing him there, Elith was struck by his commitment to the moment, his willingness to withhold any thought, advice, or opinion, and to remain content in his duty, no matter what fate might have in store for him. But there was more, too. He wasn't looking to the Arbiter or the Paragon. His eyes were on her, waiting for her to lead, she realized. The Azirim's words came back to her then, when he had described his way, not as a set of rules to follow, but rather as a direction to face. And while Elith couldn't be sure where exactly her next step should fall, she knew for certain which way she should go. Well, she said, looking back at the Paragon, I'm sorry to reject your judgment a second time, Illumined Mother. But if we are unable to find a way, before we declare defeat, perhaps we should try to make one. She held the matriarch's gaze, the two women locked once more in a contest of wills over nothing more than who would be the first to look away. And in that contest, Elith caught the spark of the ancient woman's once indomitable spirit. The heavy despair still clung to her, but something else seemed to be taking the most fragile root, so vulnerable and delicate that a harsh breath might yet wither it. It was not true hope in Elith, or even in a future, but a hope that such hope might exist, or perhaps that it might be called forth into existence if only the right voice cried out. In other circumstances, Elith would have refused to concede to the Paragon, but for now, she bowed her head in a show of respect to the Paragon's office within the first house, if not to the woman herself. Afterward, she nodded in turn to the Arbiter and to Nieta.
Where are you going? Nieta asked.
Elith moved toward the door, answering over her shoulder, to find Varen. But as she reached the exit, Karush held up a hand.
If that's your intention, he said, you may not need to go far.
You think he's close by? She asked.
Karush nodded. He's standing at the edge of the clearing. Chapter 23. Karush stood with Elith near the edge of the base camp, both of them looking out across the wide clearing to the figure standing just outside the distant tree line. Without optics, he was little more than a dark shape standing out in the glade. But Elith had no doubt it was Varen. The air itself seemed bound in ice, motionless, heat-sapping.
How long do you think he's been there? She asked.
I have no idea, Karush answered, but I think he tripped the perimeter warning a few minutes ago. That's what I left the Paragon's room to check on. He hasn't moved since I first saw him.
Well, Elith said, I suppose I should go see what he wants.
I'll bring the skimmer around, Karush said. We'll go together.
But Elith shook her head. It's okay. I'll walk.
Elith.
She turned and looked at the Azirim. You've done your part, Karush. Time for me to do mine. He regarded her for a long moment, but apparently recognized she wasn't going to let him come with her, no matter what.
Be safe, he said.
She turned to face Varen, some 500 yards away. I don't think there's any way to do this safely, she said, but none of us came here expecting safe, and I think we've done all right so far. See you in a bit, Wari Karush. Elith strode off then, eyes fixed on the distant figure, mind fixed on her purpose. It had been a long time since she'd first clashed with Varen, when he had ceased resisting her attempts to delve into his being and had nearly overwhelmed her with the force of the chaotic power within him. But she had studied the source of that power since that meeting, tested it systematically, found its deeper presence hidden in the folds of her first house training. Whatever Quell's shadow had done to him, she knew he had not lost himself entirely to it. And as long as some of him remained, there was something within him she knew she could contend with. For most of her journey across the clearing, he kept his place, as still as if he were feeling the sun on his face with eyes closed. Despite his stillness, as she crossed the halfway point, she felt an unease that grew as she continued her approach, as though some sort of pressure were emanating from him. Within the first few moments, she recognized the sensation. It was the same as the heavy presence she'd felt beneath the mountain, though here beneath the open sky, it had lost its overtly oppressive nature. As she reached a distance where she could just begin to make out some of his features, Varen stepped forward, walking slowly to meet her. He had his hands behind his back, the way he often did whenever he adopted his philosopher-teacher persona. But as he approached, the invisible, alien cloud advanced with him. It filled Elith with an inexplicable, sharp-edged energy, awe blended with a heightened sense of danger, as though she'd been sent out alone to meet the first native emissary of Quell's shadow. They stopped with about 20 feet between them, she unwilling to enter farther into whatever presence clung to him, and he seemingly wary of approaching within her range of physical attack. Though he didn't smile at her, she saw a lightness in his eyes that suggested he was still more himself than whatever the planet had enticed him to become, at least for now.
"Was that Karush I saw?" he asked, his voice quiet and concerned.
"It was." He nodded, and his shoulders relaxed with some small measure of relief.
"I was afraid I had killed him."
"You did," she answered. Varen looked at her for a long moment, reading her face.
"You restored him?"
"Not me," Elith said. "I may have spoken the words, but it was the deep language that did the work." He smiled at her then, subdued but pleased.
"You've come so far in such a short time, Elith. Yours is truly a gift.
And you seem to have returned to the worst version of yourself, Varen." At the mention of his name, all light left his eyes, and he seemed to look right through her, not as though he were mesmerized, but rather as though her physical form had lost its substance, and he was seeing something more fundamental. His face changed so dramatically to an expression so unnatural for him that it struck her like looking at his corpse, as if embalmed and prepared by those who had never known him.
"That name no longer has meaning," he said.
"You got tired of that one again?" she replied. "Then which one should I use? Grief? Eth Amuin? The first speaker? You've had so many, it's hard to keep up."
"I'm afraid there is no name by which you may know me now."
"Ah,
because you've transcended such trivialities, I suppose?"
"No,"
he said, "because mine is beyond your comprehension."
"As is the extent of your arrogance, apparently.
I'd guess even the Arbiter couldn't calculate enough dimensions to measure it now. Varen smiled at the barb, but the distance remained as though he were humoring a child.
You must recognize, she said, that you aren't yourself.
Myself, he said. No, I'm much more than that now. Something closer to what I meant to be.
Then what are you doing here?
I told you before, he answered. I cannot let you destroy this place. And since I was unable to prevent you from reaching the Paragon, I knew I would need to join you here, in hope of persuading you to choose a different course.
That was you? Under the mountain?
In a manner of speaking.
Then you should have known you'd have to try harder than that if you wanted to kill me.
Kill you, he said,
apparently genuinely alarmed by the sentiment. For a moment, he was fully himself.
I was protecting you, Elith.
Strange method.
Did it not occur to you that it would have been nothing for this creation to crush you beneath the weight of that mountain? And it would have done so had I not prevented it.
He took a step toward her, but stopped at her reaction. The psychic distance between them opened again, the man receding under whatever influence the planet maintained over him or within him.
Elith.
Elith,
do you still not see that I don't want this world to destroy you any more than I would have you destroy it?
You'll have to pick one, she said, because you can't have both.
If it must come to that,
Varen answered, and it sounded like he was about to say that he'd already made his choice, but instead he stopped himself and said,
I don't want it to come to that, Elith. It doesn't need to come to that.
And in that moment, she saw what she'd been looking for, hoping for, conflict within him. The shifts in his demeanor and responses to her had signaled that some measure of his true self remained intact. But now she heard genuine struggle in his words. You're right, she said. It doesn't need to come to that. And Elith reached back into the training of her house, to the technique called unwalling the garden. She had used it on him once before and had nearly broken under the strain. But she was stronger now, and she knew him better. Knew him well enough to plunge into his psyche and find him among whatever alien thoughts held sway over him. She spoke the words in the deep language. A once hidden garden. Sunlight permeates. Varen smiled, recognizing her intent, welcoming the connection she was creating between them. He didn't resist, but in fact embraced the communion. As before, the intensity of the effect was vastly beyond that of any she'd experienced with any normal human being. She felt as though she were falling from a great height as the physical reality disintegrated into a psychic one, an internal space shared by the two selves and meshed by the technique. Through the connection, she immersed her being fully in his and entered into a constructed reality, a projection of his mind and his heart. The last time she had engaged him this way, she'd found herself on her back, surrounded by a vast, sun-blasted plain under a depthless void. But this time she landed on her feet, and all around her, lush emerald hillsides stretched as far as her eye could see, beneath a sky laden with a seamless, unending gray-green cover of clouds that hinted of a gentle rain soon to fall. And before her stood Varen.
I'm glad you're here, he said.
In their last such meeting, chaos had raged around her and threatened to overwhelm her. Now there was only peace, or rather a display of peace. Elith could sense a tautness in the idyllic scene, as though it were straining to hold together against an unseen power.
Where's your friend? She asked. He looked at her, puzzled. You know, whatever it is that you invited in, that drove you to betray us.
It's unfair to characterize my decision as a betrayal. From the beginning, I was honest about my intentions. But I am sorry, Elith. I'm sorry to have left you in that manner. If I'd had any other choice, I would have made it. But Karush would have killed me if I had stayed.
Can you blame him?
Baron chuckled. No, I suppose not. At least I hope no more than you blame me. You can't compare yourself to him. You're nothing alike.
I disagree.
He and I are both just pursuing our purpose, Eleth. Of the three of us, you're the only one out here running from something.
Varen had never hesitated to challenge her before, but his manner was typically gentle, playful. Now his words had taken on an unusual acidic edge, meant to bite deeply, intended to wound. And despite his efforts to keep the mask of control on, she saw through it to the force animating him, exploiting him. Even here in his own mind, he seemed oblivious to how his interaction with Quell's shadow had subverted his will, or perhaps he still believed himself capable of overcoming it and turning it to some good he alone could see. Eleth ignored his cutting remark and looked out over the projected landscape. The same sickly energy that permeated the physical realm of the planet saturated his psychic space. She felt the same intangible quality of the counterfeit. In that thought, Eleth realized the Paragon had captured the truer essence of Quell's shadow. Not a counterfeit, a mimic. The shadow's dark imitation of what it had studied, an imperfect echo. In evaluating that ethereal space, Eleth recalled the last conversation she'd had with Varen before his disappearance, and she recognized elements of what she saw. "This isn't Markov, Varen." The comment caught him off guard, as though it had been a non sequitur. After a moment, he glanced out over the hillsides, considered her words.
"No," he finally admitted, looking back to her. "No, it isn't. But it could be. It could be whatever we want it to be."
"Okay," she said. "I want it to be vapor."
"Oh, Eleth," he said, smiling again. "Always so quick. And still too quick to grasp for simple solutions where there are none. I thought Quell had taught you a valuable lesson about being open, about listening, but I suppose you haven't learned very much at all. And you seem to have unlearned everything that made you redeemable."
His eyes narrowed while he absorbed the punch.
"Then why are you here?"
"For you, and you alone. There's still time for us to stand together, you know. Still time for you to find your way back."
"You speak as though I had a choice. And you hide behind empty concepts of fate to escape accountability."
For a moment, he seemed to hear her, to actually be considering her words. But then he shook his head.
"It reached out to me, Eleth. Before we ever touched its atmosphere, this world sought me out and spoke to me."
"Or maybe you wanted so badly to return to Quell's work, you imagined a voice speaking what you wanted to hear."
"No. While I was in stasis, I dreamed of it."
The claim struck her with force. It should have been impossible. Stasis suspended all but the most critical automatic functions of the brain. But given all she'd experienced on the shadow, impossible no longer had meaning.
"Tell me," he said, "is there a particular reason we couldn't have had this conversation in the real world?"
"Yes," she answered. He waited for her to continue, but when she didn't, he prompted her.
"Care to share it?
I needed to see for myself how deeply entwined you are with Quell's shadow."
"Oh," he said, "why didn't you just say so?"
With that, the veil of green hills and gray clouds tore apart, and all around her the cosmos swirled, wild, limitless, mind-breaking. But it was not the pool of infinite potential as she had come to know it through the deep language. It was nearly unrecognizable, alien, as though she were viewing infinity transformed through too many dimensions, as thought-crippling as the first time she'd uttered the fundamental language of the universe and felt its energy move through her. And within it, something writhed, snake-like. Somehow, the size of the cosmos itself, and yet contained by it, unleashing upon her an ancient instinctual fear.
"Varen," she said, horrifyingly entranced. What is this?"
"I told you," he said. "Much more than just myself."
He remained unmoved as he spoke.
"But not yet what I can become."
The distorted cosmos churned in every direction, but rather than reject the sensory overload as incomprehensible, her mind twisted as it fought to decipher what it beheld. There was structure within it, patterns within patterns, a complexity that bordered on madness. And now she understood what the Paragon had tried to tell her. Whatever this was, it was beyond them. Elith tore her eyes away from the tormenting vision, forced herself to focus on Varen's face and his face alone.
"It sears the mind," he said. "You feel as though your thoughts might wrench from their moorings."
She couldn't respond. The effort to filter out all else was too great, too consuming. Varen nodded anyway. He could see her struggle. She could see he had once felt it himself.
"It pains you," he said, "only because you still think that concepts like distance have meaning."
And just as suddenly as it had all appeared, the warped universe vanished, replaced not by the idyllic hills of a false Markov, but by a flat, featureless plain under a sky radiant with galaxies.
"Still clinging to old ways," Varen continued. "But if you would just listen, truly listen to what this place can teach us. Oh, Elith, the future it would open to us is indescribable."
"Varen," she said. He closed his eyes at the use of the name, but didn't correct her. "The Paragon has delved far deeper than you have, and she understands. Whatever Quell's shadow is, we cannot shape it to our own ends. We cannot turn it from its purpose."
Perhaps she was too intent on resisting it to consider learning from it.
"It's a weapon, Varen. A weapon. There is no option but to resist it." He shook his head, agitated.
"What you call a weapon, I call an instrument. A tool whose purpose depends on its wielder. It transcended the barrier between our galaxy and what lies beyond. Imagine what we could do, you and I, with such an instrument."
"Call it whatever you want. It destroyed Quell. It's going to destroy Avamar and every other world it chooses."
"No, Elith," he said sharply. "I tried to explain before. It isn't a world killer. It's not like you."
His stinging comment targeted a place in her heart where he knew she was vulnerable. A cruel twist of a knife she herself had first buried there. In it, the shadow's influence was laid bare in him.
"You might think of it more like a world stealer," he continued, "though that too is a small-minded perspective. After all, we didn't make these worlds. We found them. We may have cultivated them, but they existed long before we did. It's only taking things that were never truly ours to begin with."
"Taking them where?"
"It doesn't matter,"
Varen shouted, and the violence of the statement seemed to surprise even him. He took a moment, recovered.
"Here, there. The distance between any two points is much smaller than you realize."
"This shadow," Elith said carefully, "is a fundamentally destructive force. It will dismantle the entire ascendance, and no amount of your semantic gymnastics can change the fact that you are siding with my adversary."
"Would you not have said the same about me once, that I was a fundamentally destructive force, and yet I learned what it was to be generative? You helped in that work, and you can continue that work, if only you would let go of what came before." "Elith, I told you some time ago that the foundation of the Ascendance was going to be shaken. I didn't know how, I didn't know when, but I knew it couldn't stand forever. This is that moment, Elith. This is the shaking, and the time for old things to pass away in the light of something new. We can shepherd this future into existence, the two of us together."
"And if I refuse, Varen, what then?" He sighed, genuine sadness in his eyes, and they were his eyes for a moment, truly Varen's eyes, and in them was the same sorrow she'd seen pass over him when he'd sought some promise of a shared future and she'd answered with silence.
"I extended my hand to you once on Quell," he said. "I'm doing so once more, here on its shadow.
I won't do so again.
Elith felt a surge in her heart then, an unexpected swell of emotion. She'd come looking for him in order to accomplish her purpose, to bring him back, and to use him to prevail against a foe that even the Paragon thought invincible. She'd let herself believe that had been the only reason. Seeing him here now, ensnared, she could no longer deceive herself, could no longer deny how deeply she cared for him, how she too had wondered what future might have unfolded for them if she had chosen a different path on Quell. And Elith realized, too, just how savagely wounded it would leave her to stand against him, to be the one to overcome him. "Do you remember the story you told me on Quell?" she said, "about the spear that couldn't be stopped, and the shield that couldn't be broken? How both could hold true as long as they never clashed?"
"I do."
Elith nodded. "I don't want to lose you to this place, Grief." The nickname resonated with him, called him back to the man he'd been when they'd parted on Quell, to the man he'd been before the Hezra forced him to become Varin once more, before he'd stepped foot on this cursed world.
"I'm not lost, Elith," he said. "I'm right where my destiny has been leading me all along."
Elith gave him one last moment, held his gaze, willed him to throw off the deception and stand once more with her. But she saw his true self receding, saw him allow himself to recede, to merge again with whatever force lay behind him, and his eyes became shadowed.
"Then," she said, "this is where our paths diverge."
She closed herself off from him immediately, dispelling the psychic connection, snapping them both back into the physical reality. All that they'd experienced together in that space had taken a single instant. In the next, she launched herself at him. But just before he was in arm's reach, she was repelled, thrown back by the dense presence around him as forcefully as if the air itself had flashed solid and punched outward. The impulse knocked her to the ground. She rolled backward up to her feet, hands up to defend herself. Varin hadn't moved to close the distance. His mistake. Elith made the hand sign of her own design, spoke words she had carefully crafted, and called the deep language to her aid. "Lightning seeks its course." The technique sped through her, unifying her senses, quickening her perception. Varin's face showed his momentary confusion as he tried to interpret her intent. His was readily apparent. Anticipating another direct attack, Varin clapped his hands together and then raised them skyward. In the motion, Elith saw the effect it would produce. She danced sideways as the ground beneath her began to surge upward. He had intended to throw her. Instead, she used the cresting earth's momentum to spring forward at an angle, taking his flank. The movement surprised him. He swept his hand around, dragging a wave of land to intercept her. But he was too slow. She crossed the gap, snatched his wrist, continued the motion around behind him, yanking and twisting his arm to off-balance and trap him. Varin had never been a fighter. His instinctual reaction was the same as any untrained human, and Elith easily followed his attempt to turn and pull away. Before she could exploit the opening, though, he spoke.
"Elith Anuel."
His voice was many voices, and the echo of her true name resonated through the planet and back again, with a power amplified by the essence of Quell's shadow. And now it knew her name. The full weight of the planet bore down on her in its oppressive power, seething with terror and unearthly malevolence. As if the dread birthed from an abysmal deep had become a tangible force driving down upon her from above. Beneath it, no human strength could stand. Elith felt the effect of the deep language drain from her, replaced by or transformed within the terrible presence. Where she had processed Varin's small motions with enhanced speed, now instead, her mind was forced open as witness to a celestial power before which all worlds stood still.
She had perceived the raw substance of the universe, had stood in the midst of infinite possibility unmoved, had wielded its energy to weave subtle designs within its fabric. Never before had she encountered it so acutely focused in such vast scale. Varen turned easily, tore his wrist from her grasp, seized her upper arm, and with otherworldly strength ripped her from the ground, wrenching the bone from its socket. Elith cried out in pain as he threw her 10 feet from him. Too disoriented to break her fall, she impacted violently, head dashing against the earth, face clawed by its frozen surface. Immediately, the awful hand of Quell's shadow fell upon her, crushing her into itself, commanding her submission to its might, dominating her once more with a collective will. With Varen's will, multiplied, amplified beyond measure. There were no techniques, no tactics, no skills by which such empyreal force could be overcome or even resisted. But in raw fury, Elith denied its dominion. She cried out again, not in pain, but in a pure, unconstrained expression of her full being, driving herself up first to a knee, then to her feet, bent double beneath the weight of oppression. But she had held that position thousands of times. The stance of her meditation, Titan bears the world. And though now it seemed she bore the cosmos itself upon her back, Elith straightened and threw off its burden. Her right arm hung immobile, dislocated, bone grinding against bone. Her left hand still had only half its strength and motion, and Elith found her spirit strained beyond its limits by a righteous fury of inexpressible magnitude. The deception of Quell's shadow entangled Varen's mind inextricably, and even in the deep language she could find no words capable of unleashing the full measure of her wrath. So instead she sang out, releasing every ounce of herself into calling on a fullness of the deep language, unrestrained by a sealing phrase or even any clear direction or focus. On Quell, she had improvised to hold a world together. Now she did so to obliterate the pure essence of one. "Elith Annuel," Varen called again, and even her deepest cry caught in the gale force of his magnified power. He made subtle signs with both hands, held his arms up in gentle motion. Despite the chaotic vortex of cosmic energy clashing between them, he stood calm, untouched and untested, and she saw then the full, terrible expanse of potential within him, and for the first time glimpsed the man he had once been as Varen Fedic, first speaker, desolator of worlds. This was his method, amplified by dire means into something wholly insurmountable. Her shield could not hold. "Elith Annuel," he said again quietly. The frozen earth crackled beneath her feet, spiderwebbing throughout the clearing. The surge passed so powerfully that Elith felt her very spirit might be torn from its roots, and she was once more cast down in its wake. Varen walked toward her then, stood a few feet away, looking down on her, projecting hideous power upon her. "Elith," he said, voice his own. Her strength was gone, her being depleted by her attempt to wield the power of the deep language with desperate, reckless abandon. And in that moment, she knew she had truly given all she had. The Paragon had been right, after all. This foe was beyond them. If there was any solace to be found, it was only that she would not live to witness its victory. Quell's shadow would use Varen to deliver her death stroke, and she was helpless before its wrath. But she would allow neither that shadow nor whatever it had forced Varen to become to dictate the manner in which she received it. Elith forced herself up from the ground for the last time. But instead of standing, she remained on her knees, back straight, hands in her lap, in the calm, relaxed posture of an advocate of the voice at formal rest, no sign of fear, resignation, or submission, simply one demonstrating full confidence in her place and standing within the universe. The quiet action of one who had endured. She looked up at him, held his gaze, and neither fear nor awe could touch her now. If Varen wanted to kill her, he would have to do so, facing no resistance, no threat, with neither reason nor excuse, but only because he himself chose that path, and though she was at his mercy, the peace within her emanated outward, radiated against whatever awful presence clung to him. Like a single dying star, holding back all the weight of darkness in the cosmos, she waited. For a moment of pure clarity, Varen emerged once more, holding himself, forcing his way out from under the shadow's influence to look upon her one last time, to plead with her from the deepest recesses of his heart. She could see that he knew in destroying her he would destroy himself, and she could see the genuine struggle within him as he fought to choose between sacrifices. But what end could be worth such a sacrifice? "Elif," he said again, tears in his eyes, "I've already destroyed the first jewel of my heart. Please don't make me destroy the last." In his words, she perceived the two realities branching before him. Varen had hoped to unify them rather than choose only one. Now he would be forced to destroy his last jewel if there was to be any hope of recovering the first. His mind unfolded before her then. Why he had dared to open himself to Quell's shadow, why even now he chose to believe its deception, all in an effort to repair the great ruin he had brought upon his home world and six others beside. And she saw, for all his great love for her, how profound was his longing for home. Indeed, her own life would seem a small cost if such an atrocity could truly be unmade. But there was no such power in the universe, no matter how greatly one might distort its fabric. Yet still, Varen clung to the false hope that maybe here, within Quell's shadow, some means of reparation could be found. He had already made his decision. He just hadn't yet brought himself to pay the price. In him, Elith beheld her end. But in that final moment, she recognized a chance to plant a seed in his mind that might one day grow into redemption. Not in time to save her, but with time to deliver the ascendance, and perhaps even Varen himself. Her last quiet action that would endure into eternity. Varen's wild power, made godlike by the incomprehensible mechanisms of Quell's shadow, could in some distant future be undone by the simplest technique of her house. A basic training tool called Mirroring Sun and Moon, the very first she'd been taught upon her induction into the Order of the Voice. She raised her left hand, made the simple hand sign, spoke the sealing phrase that she had recited times beyond counting. "A quiet pool reflects the heavens. Within, the deep revealed." It was a barely perceptible draw upon the deep language. Its effect was straightforward, its intent pragmatic. Simply, it aligned a student with her instructor to establish a shared connection, the student in stillness, mirroring the essence of the instructor, to gain insight beyond mere teaching, the instructor witnessing that reflection to judge the clarity and purity of her own purpose. But here, before her coming doom manifested, she took on the image of her destroyer's inner being, and in turn revealed the immortal, immutable truth of himself back to him. It would take time to grow beneath that shadow, but even its great deception could not prevail forever. Varen's face twisted as his raw pain intensified to fathomless anguish. He saw that she knew his mind. Worse, perhaps, that she understood. Elith smiled to herself, content. Now she had given all that she had. She closed her eyes, and in stillness heard him draw in the breath to speak her ruin.